Now let's turn our attention to Genesis chapter 42, the continuing story of Joseph and his brothers. Joseph, you remember, has administered the 7 years of preparation during the time of plenty for the start of the 7 years of famine. And those years have now started. And the change of the weather systems is not just impacting Egypt's Nile River, it's also impacting the upper Middle East as well, Canaan and Mesopotamia. And so Israel, Jacob, is having a hard time with bad crops. And so he sends his 10 sons, actually 9, because he's not, 10 sons, because he's not allowing his youngest son, who's 22 or so, Benjamin, go to Egypt. So he sends his 10 sons to Egypt to get grain supplies to eat and to use in fall planting. And when they arrive, Joseph just happens, by God's timing, to be personally present at the distribution center that they come to. And he recognizes his brothers, and he puts into place a plan to evaluate their hearts, to see where their attitudes are. And so he accuses them through an interpreter, because he's looking exactly like an Egyptian high official, and he's even speaking Egyptian through an interpreter to these men who are replying in Hebrew and back and forth like that. So he accuses them of being spies, being bad actors. They claim that they are actually all part of one family, that they are 12 brothers total of one father. There's the 10 of them, plus a younger one at home with dad, and one that is no more. And at this point, Joseph continues his mock accusation, because he knows they're telling the truth with all of that information, and puts them on ice for 3 days. That is, he puts them in custody. Now, no doubt, he fed and watered them and gave them a satisfactory place to sleep and use the restroom, all of that. But he is doing this in order, I think, to, again, test their attitudes, see whether or not they have changed. So verse 17, he put them in custody together for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you're an honest man, let one of your brothers remain confined where you are in custody. Let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households. And then bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified and you shall not die." Now that's a slight change from what he told them on the initial day. He said, 9 of you are going to stay here and 1 will go and get the brother and bring him back. Joseph's probably rethought his plan, and that means I can't neglect taking care of their families. I need to send grain, and that means I need to send the majority of them. So now he plans on keeping one of them and sending them home with supplies, and then having them bring back Benjamin. So they did so. But in making up their mind to agree to this plan, they have a discussion in Hebrew, right there in front of Joseph, who knows Hebrew. He speaks it fluently. Now, just because he's been speaking Egyptian for several years now doesn't mean he hasn't had the opportunity to keep up on his Hebrew. There probably would have been Hebrew speakers, which is, it's a Semitic language, So there might have been Hebrew speakers in the area that he could have carried on conversations with to keep fluent. But even if he hadn't, it would come back to him very quickly. So they don't know he understands what they're saying in this next line. Verse number 21. Then they said to one another, "In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us, and we didn't listen. This is why this distress has come upon us." So they, many years later, feel that this is karma. This is God returning upon them the just reward for the way they treated Joseph back when he was 17. They ate while he begged and pleaded from the bottom of the pit, and they closed their hard hearts, their hateful hearts against him, and sold him into slavery, expecting to never see him again, and possibly even expecting by now that he is dead. Now, Reuben chimes in at this point, and he says, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy? But you didn't listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood." Now, Reuben, the oldest boy, had attempted to buy some time when they were wanting to kill Joseph, and said, "Let's just put him in this pit and wait and see what happens." And his plan was to come back later and secret him away and bring him back to Jacob and possibly even get back into his father's good graces, because dad was mad at him for sleeping with his concubine in the not too distant past at that point. But they sold him into slavery while he was gone, and it was too late. He couldn't do anything about it. So Reuben is mad that they went and sold him into slavery, but he agrees with him. This is all happening to us because we didn't treat Joseph right. Verse 23, they did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. And then he turned away from them and wept. So Joseph is so moved by their words in those last two verses, the fact that they now feel bad about what they did and effectively wish that it never happened, wish that they could go back in time and fix it. The fact that they've had a change in heart and attitude touches Joseph's heart, his soul, his emotion. And he wells up with tears. And so he leaves his seat, because I'm sure he's sitting, and he goes somewhere away from them and cries. And then when he's done, he probably fixes his face. He probably puts a little bit more of that black eyeliner on that Egyptian high officials wore. And then he returned to them and he spoke to them. So he speaks to them again through the interpreter. "And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes." Now, this is an interesting thing that he does. He skips over Reuben as the eldest, possibly because this is the first time he's found out that Reuben spoke up on his behalf. So he skips over Reuben and takes Simeon instead as the hostage, the man that has to remain here in Egypt in custody until they come back with Benjamin. And he secures him. I mean, this is serious stuff. He wants them to understand. He needs them to know he's not messing around. Now, he probably lets Reuben have a little bit more freedom later, once they're gone. But this was an important thing to set the tone. And then he did something that is, again, interesting to test their truthfulness, maybe, but also maybe to show a bit of mercy and kindness. Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to replace every man's money in his sack and to give him provisions for the journey. And this was done for them. So all of them have pack animals along with their own personal animal. And these things have got great big containers. You can even see to this modern era in some parts of that Middle East area, they have donkeys that have great big baskets on each side on a kind of a saddle slung over the top of their shoulders and their back. And it was probably something like this that they'd filled all these pack animals with grain on both sides of the donkeys. And then in the personal animal of each of these men, Joseph tells his servants, just put the money that they've paid you for this grain back in the top of the container. So they loaded their donkeys with their grain, and then they departed. Now, as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. So they stop somewhere on the journey, the first oasis, probably out of the delta, heading back toward Canaan. And they need to feed their animals. So one of the guys just happens to open up the container that has his money back in the top of it. And he said to his brothers, "My money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack." At this, their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" Now, I think it's possible that they might have all then started checking all of the containers until they discovered every last one of them had their money sack put back into their container, at least one of their containers. So they are effectively getting this grain for free. And it scares them. They think this is God setting us up to be in big trouble. They probably anticipated that the military, some unit of the Egyptian military, would show up at any moment and accuse them of stealing back their coins. Or it's probably not coins. It's probably little chunks of silver, weighted chunks, stealing their money back and effectively stealing this grain. So they probably slept with great difficulty the next couple of stops until finally they got home. Verse 29, when they came to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man, the lord of the land, spoke roughly to us, and he took us to be spies of the land. But we said to him, 'We are honest men. We've never been spies. We're 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more. The youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan.' Then the man, the lord of the land, said to us, 'By this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me. Take grain to the famine of your households and go your way. Bring your youngest brother to me. Then I shall know that you are not spies, but honest men, and I will deliver your brother to you, and you shall not trade in, and then you shall trade in the land.'" And as they emptied their sacks, oh, I forgot about this whole verse here. My apologies. This is where they discover that all of them have had their silver returned. As they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were afraid. So they go back up over the story very quickly. about what had happened. And then, boom, here comes all of their money back. And they have promised that they would bring Benjamin back to Egypt. And Jacob is not a happy camper. Israel is in despair of how this is all starting to fall together. So verse 36, Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more." So he's apparently blaming them still for that, because remember, he had sent Joseph north to check on them, and they weren't where they were supposed to be. They were farther north yet. And he assumes that Joseph was killed by a wild animal as he made that part of the journey. So he blames them. And then he says, "And Simeon is no more," because we haven't yet learned it, but he doesn't plan on sending these guys back down to Egypt again. So he is writing off his number two son. Simeon's no more. And now you would take Benjamin? So you think that you're going to take Benjamin from me down to Egypt where he's never going to come back from? All this has come against me. Now Reuben said to his father, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands and I will bring him back to you." Now this is ridiculous that he would offer this. This is hyperbole. This is stress talk. Reuben effectively says, "Keep my sons as your hostage, and I will take Benjamin down, and I will bring him back again." But Jacob said back to him in verse 38, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he's the only one left." Now, he's the only one left from Rachel. And that's what makes Benjamin and Joseph so special in Jacob's mind. Now, that is problematic for the rest of the family. We've talked about that before. Jacob should have known better because he experienced favoritism in the way his father treated Esau better than himself. So he knows it's not the best situation, but he's done it anyway. He's the only one left. And if harm should happen to me or happen to him on the journey that you're about to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. Now, Sheol is the place of the unseen dead, both righteous and unrighteous. There's a separation between the two. You can check Luke 16 to kind of get a picture of how that worked in the time before Jesus' death and resurrection. Jacob is effectively saying the same thing now that he said when he was grieving over Joseph. "I will never be happy again. I will die depressed if you take Benjamin away and he is lost to me as well." So they're not going. They eat some of the grain supplies that they bought. They plant some of the grain supplies that they bought. They tend those fields. They do what they can to try to make that grain grow and survive. And it doesn't work. And so we come full circle. Basically, a year later. Chapter 43, verse 1. "Now the famine was severe in the land. When they had eaten the grain that they had bought from Egypt, their father said to them, 'Go again, buy us a little food.' But Judah said to him, 'The man solemnly warned us, saying, You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother with us, we'll go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" So Judah he's trying to function here as the leader. And he's quite sincere. He says, look, Dad, he meant it when he said, if we didn't bring our brother, we wouldn't get anything else from him. We wouldn't be allowed to buy grain again. We can't go down unless Benjamin goes with us. It's that simple, sir. Verse 6, Israel said, why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother? And they replied, the man questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, is your father still alive? Do you have another brother? What we told him was in answer to these questions. Could we in any way have known that he'd say, bring your brother down? So now we get a little bit more of the story, don't we? Joseph used his intimate knowledge of the family to question these guys in detail so that they had to give up this information. They didn't just volunteer it right off the bat. So we would be able to expand on the part of the story that we saw back when those that information was released. So Judah is saying, it's not our fault, Dad. He seemed to know things. Verse 8, Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I will be a pledge of his safety. For my hand you shall require him. If I don't bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. And if we had not delayed, we would have now returned twice. So Judah, who is the heir of this family now, remember, Reuben lost his place as firstborn because of sleeping with Bilhah. Simeon and Levi lost the ability to be substitutes for Reuben because they were the ones that murdered the Shechemites and caused all sorts of trouble because of their little sister, Dinah. So Judah is the heir. Judah is the one on whom the birthright blessing is going to be passed. He's going to have the Abrahamic blessing put upon him. And so he is functioning as kind of the next Jacob, the next leader of this family. And he says, Dad, trust me. I will go down and I will bring him back. We can't go without him, sir. It's got to be done. If I don't get him back here, you can do whatever it is you want to do to me. You can disinherit me. You can kill me. But we need to get grain. We could have made 2 trips in the last year for the needs that we have. And so his appeal finally moves Jacob. Then their father Israel said to them, if it must be, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags. So take some of the stuff that we do have, that this land is known for. Take that and carry a present down to the man. A little balm, so something from the tree sap that gets turned into medicine or perfume. And a little honey, wild bee honey. Gum, myrrh, that's also tree balm. Pistachio nuts and almonds. These types of trees would have done okay in a famine time. So take all of these special things. That's going to help. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it is an oversight. And take also your brother and arise, go again to the man. So he says, get all this done. Take what you can. Take Benjamin, but let's stack the deck in our favor. And then let's pray about it. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send you back with your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I'm bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. So he effectively says, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, but we have to try.